from Square 2, this is What's Wrong with Revenue. I'm Mike Lieberman, CEO at Square 2, and along with my longtime friend and business partner, Eric Kalis, this show answers the question many CEOs, CMOs, CROs, and business owners are asking, what's wrong with revenue? New shows drop every Thursday morning. You can find the video version of the show on YouTube at the Square 2 Marketing Channel, on our website at the What's Wrong with Revenue page located in the footer, or on our free streaming service, Square 2 Plus, both located at square2marketing.com. You can subscribe to the show or subscribe to Square 2 Plus, and we'll email you new show content as soon as it's published. You can also submit questions to the show on the What's Wrong with Revenue page of our website. Eric and I answer questions every single episode. You can also find the podcast version of the show on all your favorite podcast platforms. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to What's Wrong with Revenue, Season 2, Episode 22. I'm Mike Lieberman, CEO and Chief Revenue Scientist here at Square 2. And I'm excited today because I got a panel of experts with me from Square 2, and I'll introduce them in a minute. But we're going to tackle a pretty big question today around what type of campaign is right for you. So if we're asking the question, what's wrong with revenue? The answer could be you're running the wrong kind of campaign for your particular company, your particular product or services. So we're going to try to deal with all that today. Before we get into it, let me take care of our standard housekeeping. You can find the show on Square 2 Marketing's YouTube channel. All the video episodes included in season one and season two of the show are available on Square 2 Marketing's YouTube channel. You can go there, you can like it, you can subscribe to it, and you can leave us comments. We appreciate all those things. Thank you for those of you who have done it. The show is also available on the Square 2 website in two places. If you click on at the top of the site, the button podcast, or the bottom of the site in the footer podcast, you will go to a What's Wrong with Revenue page. There you can subscribe to the show. You can get access to the two latest episodes of the show, and you can even submit questions. If you're a fan of the show, you know that every now and then we collect questions and I answer those questions. We don't have any questions today because we have an action-packed full agenda. But if you do have questions, you can submit them there and I will get to them, I promise. And if you subscribe to the show, we'll send you an email update letting you know what upcoming episodes you can expect. And then we'll also send you a copy of the show every Thursday delivered right to your inbox if you subscribe. So you can go there and do that. Square 2 also has a free streaming service called Square 2 Plus. It's a Netflix-style service where you can get all kinds of audio and video content. We have channels for CEOs, CROs, CMOs. We have a HubSpot channel. And we're about to be featuring our new Pickleball Business Bangers episode with some pickleball and business connected content for you guys that are in the pickleball. You can check it out on Square 2 Plus. It is at square2marketing.com/square2plus. And last but not least, for all of you podcast and audio content fans, the show is available on all your favorite podcast platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Apple, wherever your favorite podcast platforms are found, you'll be able to find What's Wrong with Revenue. You can subscribe and download it as well. So let me introduce my guest. I have Frank Tolkaz. He's a senior strategist here at Square 2 Marketing. He's been with the company for 14 years. When it comes to taking care of clients and giving them good guidance and recommendations around marketing, Frank's the guy. Frank, say hi.
Hello. Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you. Beth Shope is a senior strategist at Square 2. Also, Beth specializes in a fractional CMO service the company provides. So she works with one of our largest software clients and has an interesting perspective on campaigns. And we'll dig into some of this with her. Beth, say hi.
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you.
Thanks for being on the show, Beth. And last but not least, to round out our panel of experts, got Alex Navarro. Alex is a growth specialist at Square 2, but he's also our campaign expert. So when it comes to designing the strategy around the campaigns and building out the tactics that go into our campaigns, Alex is the guy. Alex, say hi.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to the show, guys. It's really great to have a panel. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys. So, you know, the topic is of the show is about how to pick the right type of campaigns. And I think it makes sense maybe to dig into what the different kinds of campaigns there are. Before I do that, I want to give a little bit of a backstory for the show. So unfortunately, the world has conspired to make getting in touch with our prospects a lot harder than it's ever been. You can't really call them anymore because people aren't in their offices. You really can't email them anymore because they have spam filters on, and the iPhone is doing a wonderful job to let people hide their email addresses. You can try to reach out to them on social media, but if your feed is like mine, it's overrun with all kinds of garbage, so it's hard to reach people on social. You can try to get to them with content, but they're getting peppered with messages from similar companies on similar topics. And the question really comes down to, what do you do? So what I want to do during the show today is try to help you figure this out. And we're going to break down the four different types of campaigns. And look, there may be more, but we're generalizing a little bit for the sake of the show. There's inbound campaigns, outbound campaigns, demand generation campaigns, and there's even a campaign type called account-based marketing. And there are pluses and minuses to all four. We run mostly all four of these for our clients where it's appropriate. And we'll talk about that a little bit with you guys during the show. But I really want to focus on when to use inbound, what should you expect from it, how does it work, why does it work well, and in what situations. And then the same for outbound demand gen campaigns and account-based marketing campaigns, so that everyone really has a better understanding of when to apply these campaigns, what to expect, and how to think about executing them. And interestingly enough, it's possible that you might need all four. So there are situations with our clients where it's not like one or the other, but in various situations and deployed correctly, there could certainly be some scenarios where your company needs all four of these campaigns. And I'm hoping when we're done today, you'll have a really good idea about how to orchestrate those different kinds of campaigns and how to execute them appropriately. So like I said in the show, I want to cover the differences between these four types of campaigns. I want everyone to understand what it means when we say an inbound campaign, and the other three as well. When to use them, what to expect from them in terms of results, what investment might be needed to see some results. Obviously, there may be certain types of companies that are better for certain types of campaigns, so we'll talk to that a little bit. I want to get into the data and privacy considerations for these different types of campaigns because that's huge these days, and it's getting bigger. It's harder and harder for marketers to get out in front of our prospects because of data and privacy considerations, so I want to share that with everybody today. And then I want to look at the kinds of metrics that we like to track for each of these types of campaigns and how to align marketing with sales. That is a little different for these campaigns as well. So with that, let me let you guys do a kind of, you know, if we were doing, a late night show, I might say like, this is your monologue a little bit, but give me like the, you know, give me 30 seconds, each of you, on kind of your perspective on this concept of how do you think about these different campaigns and how should our listeners be thinking about which one's right for them and maybe some of your experiences working with clients around these different campaigns, but give me like a 30,000 foot, you know, short intro on how people should think about this. Alex, why don't you start?
Yeah, sure. I think that having a balanced diet of all four is a strong way to go with inbound and outbound. It's that push and pull method. And I think when you're looking at where you are as a business and who you're trying to reach, whether that be a new business or a well-established business, you still have a mixture of these four campaign models. It's just a matter of where you put your emphasis in that time of your business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if we're going to look at that, then kind of understanding the pluses and minuses of each of these are going to help us with that balance. Mm-hmm. Good. Beth, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with Alex. And to kind of put maybe a little bit of a, you know, a finer point on some of that is, so I have one client that I work with who is extremely well known in their industry. They really aren't looking for direct, you know, lead gen. They have so much, their manufacturing is full at the moment. So they, you know, they're still doing a little lead gen because, you know, at some point that, you know, that pipeline is going to go down a little bit. But they spend the majority of their time and their efforts on education and just making sure and contacting into their existing clients. Now, another client that I work with is really just had, you know, put out a brand new product, and they're really like, you know, have got brand new features. And so they are really focused more on the demand gen and that other end of the campaign. But we still need all those other pieces there. So like, as Alex said, you want to make sure you're not, you know, just doing one of the four, but depending on where you are in your history and in your current, you know, state of business, it definitely will direct where you're going to put the majority of your budget. So
yeah, makes sense. Good. Frank, how about you? What's your opinion on all this?
Yeah, I totally agree with my colleagues as it relates to integration of the campaigns. I guess one of the first places I try to go with our clients is what type of list do you have? You know, what do you know about your prospects? What do you know about your clients? Because obviously it all has to start there, whether it's outbound or an account-based marketing campaign. So I really try to coach them or talk to them about cultivate that relationship, get to know your audience right from the beginning. And you know, I know you'll be talking about data and privacy. We realize how important that is, but you have to have a good list. You have to really have sales and marketing work together so you know where that list is in the buyer's journey and you can really target them in the appropriate way and keep that buyer journey awareness relationship nurturing going.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We are going to get into that. If you have a robust list, that might influence which of these campaigns you pursue. If you don't have any information that or any list or any database contacts, that's going to be another input into which of these types of campaigns make sense for you. So that's really good, Frank. Thanks for bringing that up. So let's get into it. Let's talk about the differences between these four types of campaigns. So I'm going to, you know, let's start with inbound and I'll throw it out there. Which of you guys would like to kind of talk about like how you would describe in a sentence or two what an inbound campaign is? Frank, you want to go?
Sure. So in a couple of sentences, inbound is really putting content out there that is searchable and somewhat easily found by your target audience. We know content is king, and everything that we do is focused on optimization, keyword search, people finding you, being out there where they don't really feel a lot of pressure, right? We're not pushing anything outbound. They're searching for something, you know, and your business, your offering comes up. That's outbound at its simplest, in its simplest description.
Inbound. Yeah, you're right. You're, you know, the people at HubSpot, they obviously coined the phrase inbound marketing, and Brian Halligan is kind of attributed to this phrase that inbound is the size of your brain is more important than the size of your wallet. And he says that because the objective around inbound is to be there when someone's looking for you. Right. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to trying to get in front of someone that might not be interested in your products or services like traditional advertising traditionally does, inbound proposes you earn somebody's attention so that when they're looking for you, they find you and they get what they're looking for. And then you can have an ongoing conversation with them. Right. Inbound. Yeah. Sometimes people consider inbound a more reactive campaign because you're planting a bunch of seeds and waiting for them to grow, not really knowing when they're going to grow or who's going to be looking for them or, you know, when they're going to produce leads. But if I'm available when people are searching, they'll find me. If I've created enough educational content that's out there, people will find it, find my material and find me. That's really the roots of inbound.
Yeah,
Alex, what about demand gen? Talk to us a little bit about how a demand gen campaign might be different than an inbound campaign.
Yeah, so with demand gen, you're really creating that demand for an interest with your business. And it's in a more forceful way than, say, an inbound campaign, where you're using your earned media and you're creating this thought leadership materials. With demand gen, you're reaching a very large audience. You're with a very specific message, and perhaps using particular keywords to rank well with your search engine results, and using paid media to get in front of your audience there.
Yeah, I think the major difference is you're paying for attention, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of earning attention with your content like inbound, you're paying for attention. So you are executing a similar targeting exercise and that you're trying to put your message and your content in front of people who look like your best customers, but you're paying for that position. You're paying to get in front of people and you don't really know whether they have an interest in or need in what you're doing or not. You're kind of banking on the fact that, well, they look like all these people over here who I'm helping. There's probably going to be some need there. I'm going to put my message, my story, my content in front of them, and hopefully there'll be some interest there. So for me, I always compare it to, you know, being out there and people are looking for me and getting their attention, or forcing my way in front of the people who could potentially be needing my stuff and getting their attention that way. Make sense, folks?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Good. Yeah.
Beth, maybe you could talk a little bit about account-based marketing, because it's kind of like a little bit of a couple of these kind of smushed together. Like if inbound and outbound got together and had a baby, it might be account-based marketing, right? So like talk to us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, so account-based marketing, you're really leveraging your existing customers and leveraging the client list that you already have, and then going after and looking at them and saying, okay, well, I'm helping them with this need. Where else can I help them within the organization? Can I help them, you know, if it's in within a different department, and really trying to take a look at where within the organization you can grow and build those relationships and really start to grow your account from within side, but you're utilizing your existing customer base and really looking at the accounts that you have and growing from within side versus looking for, you know, new customers or new places to pick. You're really working within your existing database.
Yeah, this is kind of like, to Frank's point, like if you know your prospects, then account-based marketing is a really good campaign type for you, right? If you know the companies you want to do business with, if you know the people at those companies you want to do business with, if you have their names, their addresses, their email addresses, their phone numbers, then account-based marketing campaigns are really going to be a good fit for you. You'll take the same content and the same messages and the same stories and the same materials that we've been talking about for inbound and demand gen, but you'll leverage them in a different way to get them in front of those very specific people at those very specific companies. You know, one of the questions we ask our prospects is, well, do you know who you want to sell to? And if the answer is, well, no, not really, we have more of like a persona, well, then inbound and demand gen is going to probably be better. But if they're like, oh, no, we know exactly who we want to talk to, we know their names, we know their phone numbers, we know their email addresses, then typically we start with an account-based marketing approach for those kinds of customers. So,
yep. And I find organizations where you have really tight sales and marketing alignment is where account-based, you know, campaigns really work and really help. You know, they can really take totally off and agree. Really help, because you really need that alignment between sales and marketing to make that really live and go and grow.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, it's a really good point. In fact, I don't think you could really do an account-based marketing campaign if you didn't have tight alignment between sales and marketing. So again, when we're talking to prospects and we're talking to them and they, you know, if they don't have that alignment, but they do have the names, I might pause a little bit on the account-based approach as well, because if marketing and sales is not working together closely, then that campaign is going to have some challenges. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, that goes to like the pipeline targeting, you know, with the sales and marketing alignment. If you're able to view some of the critical deals that are going to happen in the future and look at the pipeline and picking out certain accounts that may be more valuable to you, and maybe you make adjustments to your bidding strategy and your budget allocations and go toward an account-based marketing strategy to reach those accounts. Granted, you're not going to have the demand generation that we just talked about campaigns where you reached a broader audience. You're going to be much more fine-tuned with your audience and reach those specific accounts that may bring in the most revenue quicker and perhaps shorten that sales cycle. So that's another plus for account-based marketing.
Really right. Good point. Thank you.
And that's why a well-managed CRM is so critical.
Yeah, I think regardless of which of these campaigns you're considering, you do need to have a really good database and a really good platform with which to manage the data. We'll talk about data in a minute. So good. So we talked about inbound, we talked about demand gen, we talked about account-based marketing. We didn't talk about outbound. I'll talk briefly about it only because we don't typically recommend a ton of outbound at Square 2. Like I said, as I kicked off the show, it's just become increasingly difficult to run like a pure outbound cold call, cold email effort these days. And, you know, we'll talk about some of the challenges, but I feel like it's getting harder and harder to do that. Number one, a lot of people are not in their office. So it's, you know, calling offices isn't as effective as it used to be. You know, if you want to get in touch with me, you have to have my cell phone. So, you know, that number is not really publicly available. So, you know, if you're trying to call CEOs of small marketing firms, like, it's going to be hard to get in touch with me over the phone. Even when someone does try to call me, I don't really answer that phone unless I know who it is. So if I'm getting a caller ID and I don't know the number, it's going right to voicemail. And if I don't know who you are, I'm not replying to your voicemail. Even when you try to trick me with one of those locally geotagged numbers and I don't know the number, I'm not falling for it. I've fallen for it too many times. So if that's your plan, I would tell you to scrap that also. And on the cold email side, that's getting more difficult too. There are spam traps. Even if you're buying lists, those lists are filled with spam traps, just so you're aware of it. Seamless AI, Zoom Info, you know, all of those lists are not necessarily curated to prevent you from getting into trouble if you start cold emailing people from those lists. You really need to run it up against a service like Neverbounce or something like that to make sure that at least the email address is active. And even that is not going to necessarily guarantee that you don't run into trouble. And I've seen clients have their IP address suspended. I've seen them have their HubSpot or internet service provider account suspended. I've seen clients with their entire Google Suite account suspended also because someone, thought they were spamming. So proceed with caution is my advice if you're considering outbound. But I know a lot of people do it. I guess they still feel like there's some value in it, but it probably would not be at the top of the list of our set of recommendations.
Yeah. And Mike, have you been getting a bunch of LinkedIn messages too? I feel like a lot of the cold calling emails are now on LinkedIn, and maybe we need to make some adjustments to some of the messaging there. Most of my LinkedIn inbox is filled with that now too. So I feel like most of the traditional emails have gone into other channels and trying to be more creative with your outbound marketing. I don't know if you've seen the same thing.
Well, the marketers ruin everything, right? So now we've ruined LinkedIn also. And you know, I'm not on LinkedIn that much. I might look at it once every other day or so just to see kind of what's going on and clean out my red number off my app because that bothers me. But you're right, Alex. There's a ton of crap in there. There's a ton of people asking me for 5 minutes or wanting to show me something or wanting to sell me something. Their messaging isn't even particularly creative. It's kind of like a pretty bad effort. And I often vacillate between just deleting it or shooting them back a message being like, you know, like, what are you doing? This is horrible. Like, you could do so much better and we could help you. And I generally 99 out of 100 times just default to, I'm just going to delete it, which is sad because I feel like I should be helping the community get better. But, you know, there's just too much garbage in there. So you're right. LinkedIn has become kind of just as bad as our email boxes.
Yeah. And I also see with business to consumer, I'm sure we all do, they're targeting me via text. And I'm always like, how are they even getting my information to target me with a text? So, you know, they're obviously finding every avenue they can. It's a game to try to keep up with.
Definitely part of it. And I'm actually pretty good at alerting Apple or whoever that this is spam when it comes to a text message, because it's I don't get those as frequently. And I get that nice little link at the bottom, report as spam. So thanks, Apple.
Delete and report as junk or whatever.
Whatever,
I should really feel like I'm teaching them a lesson by reporting them as spam, right? Eventually they'll start to realize this tactic's not working.
Right. And also in outbound marketing, I feel like the traditional ad sets are included there, like the broadcast, the radio and television spots where someone's just watching TV and all of a sudden your brand is pushed upon them. So that's another one that shouldn't be missed there. That's more traditional.
You're right. And I actually pay extra for streaming services that don't have ads. So I'm willing to pay extra to not have any ads. Even when I listen to the radio in the car and an ad comes on, I'll just turn the thing down until the ads are over and then turn it back up again. I really wish I had a button on my car radio that I could just had no ads, and it would just mute the thing until the ads are over, and then the content would come back on again. But I'm a little more zealous about this than other people because of my my industry, but it's bad. It's really bad.
Well, maybe that's something you look into. Okay.
No, go ahead, Alex. It's good. Go ahead.
Maybe that's something you look into when you're considering account-based marketing. If I'm trying to reach you, and you're, I would reach out to, let's just say, Spotify, so that I don't have ad, to the people who don't have ads. Mm-hmm. I may want to consider some other channel that could get to you so that I could reach you with our advertising in a way that it'll actually land on your ears. So, and you can do that, but the first step is to really fine tune that targeting for your account-based marketing and then find ways to reach you and in more creative ways.
It's a really good point. It's a really good point. And I'll just add to that before we move on. I often feel like they are trying to trick me, right? So here are a couple examples. I go to the ATM to get money out, and I now have to sit through a series of ads before my money pops out on the ATM. Right. I'm just annoyed. I'm like, where is my cash? I'm not interested in being advertised to. I go to the movies, and in the movies, there are ads before the movie starts. Now I'm captive because I'm sitting there waiting for the movie to start, but I'm annoyed that they took advantage of my time at the movie to try to advertise to me. Right. So, you know, to your point, I'm wondering if they had actually a more targeted, more creative, more emotional and disruptive message, if I would feel less tricked and actually engage with the content. But they're not even trying. They're just serving up the same dribble that they serve up on all the other channels. And I'm just annoyed that I have to now watch this when I'm not interested in being advertised. Right. So yeah, it's all so interesting to me. Like, I wish people would really try harder to A, create a better message, and B, target their advertising, their outreach more directly. But okay, yeah. Well, we're not going to solve that problem today. okay, so I think we talked a little bit about when to use them, and I think we kind of dug into that a little bit. But I would like to talk a little bit about expected results from each of these kind of campaigns, and maybe investment levels are kind of relevant. I feel like when it comes to investment, it's generally like, you know, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. So I don't know if we're actually able to say like, well, these kinds of campaigns generally run these ranges, because I don't think that's really how it works. But maybe we could talk a little bit about, you know, if I'm running an inbound campaign, what should I expect from it from a results perspective? So, you know, Alex, I'll let you kick this off. Like, if I'm running an inbound campaign, you know, like we said, it's more reactive, right? So maybe expecting sales opportunities from an inbound campaign is a little unrealistic. Maybe expecting new customers from an inbound campaign, at least immediately, is a little unrealistic. But like, what could I expect from an inbound campaign in terms of results?
Yeah, so I think that goes, the first question is, how big is your audience? How far are you with your inbound strategy? Are you a well-established thought leader? And do you have a big audience to where if you pushed out something, a new piece of content, or an ebook or a new video, how many people would see that right off the bat? And then how shareable is that content? So really with inbound, you're not necessarily using the paid media side and pushing that message. You're really relying on your content and your earned media and your owned media. And so depending on how big that is, I think that's how far your reach can span. However, I think with inbound marketing, it has the capability to be an evergreen piece of content, to where it doesn't just stop after you pull the plug in your ad dollars. It exists, and it could help with your SEO. It could help bring traffic to your website. There's additional value there that is more of a lifetime value, opposed to a a paid ad that's clicked. And then once you turn off that ad, unless you have established a following because of that ad, then you can use your inbound marketing later to reach a bigger audience. And I think growing that audience is important, not just for growing followers, but down the road, whenever you have a new piece of content, it will boost that new piece.
And that's a good point.
Yeah. And so much of that has to do with, you know, you're speaking to results, has to do with doing your homework and your due diligence about what is your content, you know, having a good content strategy, going all the way back to your personas, what are their pains, so that as you're developing these pieces of content in an inbound campaign, you obviously have a better chance of engaging those audiences because you're really writing to their, to what they need, what they want. So obviously that is a big factor to help your campaigns. It starts all the way back there.
Yeah, I mean, the evergreen comment is a good one. And one I don't know that people always kind of get. Like, you know, you write a blog article, they're out there forever. I mean, they may generate some initial interest when you publish it and you share it. But, you know, if it's well written and it has SEO in mind and it has some good thought leadership content in it, it might get ranked and might, you know, drive visitors to your website, you know, for a, you know, months out into the future or even longer. I mean, some of the articles Square 2 has from years ago still bring us, you know, 50, 60, 70 views a month to our website. So that's a really good point. And just to answer the question around results around inbound, you know, I think they're generally early buyer journey data points, like, you know, visitors to your website. It could be an inbound metric that you're tracking because you are publishing content. You are working on getting ranked organically. You are pushing content to SEO and looking for organic SEO. You may publish some content on other referring sites where your target market is spending some time. So, you know, the individual performance of those channels is one metric. And then all of those people should be kind of congregating at your website as a pinch point. So there's a whole bunch of metrics associated with your website, like visitors, like conversion rate, like visitors to certain landing pages, you know, how content is performing on your website, how CTAs are performing on your website. And I even think generally if there's an ability to generate an MQL from your website, so if there's other content that people can download and they become a new contact in your database, I think that could be potentially an inbound metric also. You know, I don't know if you're going to be looking for sales opportunities from an inbound campaign. I think you could get lucky and some of those, you know, MQLs could be sales opportunities, but I think generally it's earlier buyer stage metrics that are associated with inbound campaigns. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
to you guys?
And I think to Alex's point too, around time frame is I've seen people put out content that, you know, they're starting inbound and it takes could take a year to 2 years before they really start seeing that traffic, really seeing that really have legs and start bringing things in. And I've seen where, you know, in a very niche market, you know, somebody put out a piece of content that everybody was like, oh my gosh, have you seen this? And they started sharing it around. And it was sort of like one of those like little blips of like, you know, almost going viral with a piece of content they put out because it was a very specific, you know, graph that like showed things that, you know, and this one particular set of engineers were all like started passing around. So, you know, a lot of it depends on, you know, like you said, you know, audience size, but from the time perspective, it really, I always say that, you know, inbound is a long game. You always want that running. You want it there, but it's the long game. It's not, you know, if you're looking for, you know, new sales and to, you know, increase revenue in the next 3 months, inbound's not the campaign you're going to go with. That's not the strategy you're going to take right in that moment. So.
Right. Yeah. Good point, Beth. Thank you. So if we're going to shift gears and talk about demand gen, like what are some of the metrics associated with demand gen? Because again, in a lot of cases with demand gen, we're not even gating the content. We're kind of just like putting it out there. So we might not be able to track the conversion on our website or a new MQL. So what are some of the, I'll just open it up to whoever wants to answer this. What are some of the metrics and results we might expect if we're running a demand generation campaign?
Well, generally, if you're running a demand gen, you're hopefully having a landing page or something on your website that you're driving them towards. So, you know, tracking that interaction and seeing, you know, how many people are actually coming through the ad, clicking, and then landing, at that place, you know, be it, you know, like you said, a landing page or whatnot on your site, if it's a video, the plays, things like that. So really looking to see what that initial interaction is and where you're dropping people off. And then generally on that interaction where they're landing, you want another interaction, keep leading them through to more pieces, more content. If it's a conversion form at that point, or, you know, another white paper or a blog post. So looking at that CTA and seeing how those conversion points are working.
Yeah, I will say, I think the main goal would be just to, the main goal would be to acquire that traffic and awareness. You're trying to reach that broad net with demand gen campaigns. And, you know, the metric could be your traffic. It could be impressions. If it's brand awareness, you want to see how many people saw your digital billboard. And then to best point, once they land on your page, are you optimized in a way to where they're going to go in a user journey that leads to a conversion? And so a conversion point could be a metric as well.
Right. Yeah, it's all good. It's really more about eyeballs than it is individuals for demand gen, right? I mean, it's it's about brand awareness. A lot of demand gen campaigns is how do we get the word about you out there? So it's really about like getting you in front of as many people as possible. And if you do have the right content and the right message, it should turn into a visit to a page or a visit to a piece of content or a view of a particular video. And then that content has to be good enough to get them on the site, clicking around, and eventually get them to come out of the forest and identify themselves. Attribution is something that marketers talk a lot about. I could probably do a whole show on attribution, but the short story is I've never been a huge fan of it because of all the things we've been describing, right? If I run an ad and someone clicks on it and they land on my website and they look around and they go to a couple pages and they download something and they give me their email address and then I nurture them for a week and then they finally turn into a sales opportunity, they basically have done six things with my business. How do I assign the revenue for that particular piece of business to those? Which of those six things gets it? I mean, some people like first touch, some people like last touch, but honestly, I've always felt like good marketing is all of those things working together. And it's not really super, it's never been super important to me knowing which one is doing that most of the heavy lifting. I'm more interested in the net result, which was we got a new lead from all of those activities and that lead turned into a certain amount of money. So I don't really want to spiral out into an attribution conversation. Like I said, that's probably a whole show in and of itself. I think account-based marketing has a different set of metrics and measurables if we're running a campaign like that. Frank, are you comfortable talking about some of those results and measurables in an account-based marketing campaign?
Well, I think, you know, it is easier. Again, it all goes back to, do you have a good target list? Do you have enough information? You know, account-based marketing, if it's a dimensional mailer, perhaps, you know, something that you can track easier. If it's an event and invitations go out. So I do feel like there are easier ways to track performance. And one thing I want to add too with all of these programs, and it may go without saying, but many times we'll recommend a pilot program so that we can test these and kind of look how they perform, see how they perform without a huge expenditure. I just wanted to, before I forgot that point, I just wanted to add that in there. So I do think with account-based marketing, it behooves us to make recommendations of really creative offerings. And a lot of them naturally lend themselves to better tracking. But of course, they
you're 100% right, right? Like if we have a list of 10 companies and 100 people that we want to get in touch with, well, the first metric is how many of those people do we get in touch with, right? Like how many of those people do we connect with on LinkedIn? You know, that's a metric. How are we doing getting new connections? And then from there, how are we doing engaging those people in conversation? So how many of those new connections are actually engaged that sales rep in a at least an educational conversation about how maybe some help could be advised. And then from there, you know, how many of those engaged people become opportunities, right? Yep. So the funnel is pretty clear in account-based marketing. In a way, it's not so clear in some of the other campaigns we've been talking about. And to our earlier point, sales is actually providing a lot of that direct data back to marketing in terms of how the connect outreach is working and how the engaged outreach is working. And you know, how many of these people are actually good opportunities for sales, sales qualified leads or sales opportunities. And again, depending on your sales cycle, it might take you a couple months to actually work these contacts through the process and for them to become measurable opportunities. But there are some good metrics associated with account-based marketing. On the outbound side, like there are metrics, but they're not great, right? Like how many calls did you make? How many emails did you send? How many of those emails got kicked back? How many calls actually ended up in conversations? Mm-hmm. How many of those conversations actually are producing an opportunity? And the same thing with the emails, like the numbers are going to be pretty bad, but I feel like people who run outbound campaigns, they're just looking at like, well, I know the numbers are going to be bad, so I'm going to send 10,000 emails and I know I'm only going to get, you know, 20 that connect. But if I get 20 that connect, that's 20 more than I have before. So they kind of talk themselves into really bad numbers, but that's kind of the nature of those types of campaigns. That was really helpful. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate that. I want to make sure that we cover the data and privacy considerations across these campaigns, because I think they're really important in helping our audience decide which campaign is right for them. And then since we already talked about metrics and we already talked about alignment, maybe we can wrap up after that. So, you know, this is a pretty fast paced and changing area of marketing. And Alex, I know you've done some research in this area. So maybe you could just talk to us in general about what's going on with data and privacy and how it's informing our recommendations to clients around what type of campaigns to run.
Yeah, so a lot of them has been said already about the GDPR policies. You've seen the little cookie banners at the bottom of your website when you visit a new website and you have to accept the cookies and so forth. And I believe the cookie days are soon going to be behind us. And we used to be able to, and we still can to some extent, be able to track who comes to your website, specific pages that they visit. And then let's just say they visit a page in topic A or product A, and then you want to target that same viewer, visitor for that same product with product specific ads. Now that link is becoming more and more difficult because of regulations, not just in the EU, but also in the United States and growing worldwide. I know that there's a CCPA regulation and several other states are requiring new regulations and standards to comply with from a business perspective. So growing your audience and your lists, your first party data is going to be more and more important, because then you can build on that. And there's actually ways that you can share your first party data in a privacy protected way with Google or with Facebook, Meta, and then you can target them in that direction in that way, where you used to use cookies, and now it's a privacy, it's protected, it's hashed, and you can also use that list for lookalike campaigns going forward. And I think that is the big change that's happening now, and that's why it's so important to build those lists and have your lists clean and segmented into your separate personas or however you want to segment them so that you can target them later with your campaigns.
Yeah, I want to make sure everyone heard what you said. So like this concept of using cookies to advertise to people because of who they are or where they've been is going to be coming to an end. And if you don't have a really strong set of first party data, meaning data that you own because people opted in to be on your list, it's going to be harder and harder for you to execute marketing campaigns. So it sounds like what you're saying, and I would like you to talk in a little more detail about how that first party data is going to be used by Google, just so that everybody understands. But it sounds like what you're saying, now is the time to really lean into into collecting data for people who are opting in to hear from you, right? And that might be getting more aggressive with inbound, where you're publishing content and getting people to want it and getting people to share their contact information with you in exchange for that information, so you can earn their attention and build out your list. The stronger your list, the more robust, the more comprehensive, the easier it's going to be for you to do marketing in the future. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have, I mean, you'll be a step ahead if you can start building your list now and get them organized. And really, it comes down to having a clear privacy policy so that everyone's aware, all of your users are aware of how you're going to use their data, and so that they're more willing to share their information with you. And then Google can take that and hash it in a privacy protected way and reach those, that audience who has opted in to receive that information. So they're allowing you to reach out to you at the ATM, essentially, to go back to your point. And in doing so, the audience will be more receptive, and you won't feel like you're being forced this ad based on your previous engagement with a brand.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I ask a question then? Is that, or do you see that being, that the trend has been to ungate a lot of things and just put, you know, put content out there. Do we see this adding to like maybe that trend flipping back on its head and adding more gates in front of content? Or is this something that Google's doing like on the backside, like that, you know, that the individual doesn't actually have to enter their name into a form? I guess that's where I'm not 100% sure with what you're—
No, this would require you having their information based on some sort of consent that they've given you, typically on a form. And the form gating discussion, I feel like it goes back and forth like a pendulum. And ultimately it comes down to, would you be willing to give up your email address based on what you're going to receive? If so, then sure. But, and also how much content are you creating on a regular basis? You see really large brands that create thousands of pieces of content, whereas they may, you know, give that away without a form and be very selective. Maybe it's just their newsletter that you have to sign up for, where you'll receive this essentially free piece of content where you don't have to download it. Whereas smaller brands that produce just a few pieces of content every year may be more interested in gating some of their pieces of content. It's just kind of a philosophy, a brand philosophy that you may have. And however, once you start gating it, you do need to consider your conversion rates and track that. If you see a very large dip, then, you know, maybe you have too many form or fields on your form, or maybe you need to remove the field altogether so that more people can see and view your piece of content, understand the value of that content, and then going forward, be more willing to download it later, or at least follow you for more content. So I think there's a lot of different areas and it depends on your brand.
Yeah, or even create, like we do a lot of times for clients, a resource library or a resource center that might be gated. You know, it might, it has that perceived value. And then your prospects and hopefully your customers come back for more, you know, educational content. So that's another way to look at gated versus non-gated based on perceived value.
Yeah, I also like to answer the gated, non-gated question in context of the buyer journey. So if someone is early in their buyer journey, I like to give them content that is ungated. And to Alex's point, my feeling is, well, they don't really know me that well yet. They're not really that serious about this. They're still looking around. So why put friction in between my content and their education, right? If I do a good job with the content, my feeling is they'll come back, and they may come back when they're a little further in their buyer journey. And if I offer them something that's deeper in the buyer journey and it is gated, they'll probably be more willing to give me an email address or convert on something like that. And now they're in my community and I can continue the conversation with them because it's more appropriate. They're ready for that. They're deeper in their buyer journey, maybe a stage or two further along. So this is exactly what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, where sometimes you need demand gen tactics and inbound tactics running at the same time. And maybe, you know, to our question, which kind of campaign is right for you? Maybe in a lot more cases, it's like a hybrid approach where you're running some inbound tactics, you're running some demand gen tactics, your campaigns are kind of blending some of this together. You know, Beth, to your point, if they do know who they want to go after, they could be having a whole separate track for account-based marketing while the demand gen and the inbound are running, you know, simultaneously. And to some extent, that's probably the best advice we could give somebody, right? Like the more they do, the more results they're going to get. The challenge comes in almost all of our cases, you know, there's a limited budget and these clients can only do so much. And it's not even often money. Sometimes it's just bandwidth. Like they just don't have the bandwidth or the resources to execute all of these campaigns at the same time. So we have to help them do some prioritization or maybe some sequencing or, you know, maybe some compounding over time to try to figure out how to do this. But I think that all works really well. And Alex, that was really a good explanation of pretty significant change that's going to be coming to the market at some point. You kind of mentioned quickly that the California Consumer Protection Act, like they have the most stringent US-based policy around privacy and regulation, what you can and cannot do. But other states are quickly adding their own version of that. So while there may not be like a federal mandate around what you can do in this country, there's definitely going to be state by state regulations around what companies can do. And honestly, what you're going to want to do about that is just pick a really high standard across the entire country and stick with it, and then not really worry about what the individual states are doing. If you practice good policies around this, you'll be fine. Even the California Act isn't too stringent, I don't think. It's fairly reasonable in terms of what they're expecting from companies and their marketing. Should not be a problem if you're not sending out 100 million cold emails all at once. Great. Anything else you guys want to add before I wrap up? That was a really good, helpful overview of four important types of campaigns that we talk to clients about pretty much every day.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, marketing is perpetual. I think you have to keep the momentum going. These campaigns give you diversity and options, but like Mike said, it's not always easy. That's why marketing automation can come into play and really help with nurtures and things like that. But I think you just have to keep your eye on the long game or the longer term, and just steady and, you know, sure and steady wins the race. That's what
it's a marathon, not a sprint, right, Frank?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
that's right.
Good. Nice. Thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate your insights and expertise. It's been great. I'll remind everybody, if you're interested in What's Wrong with Revenue, you can go to the YouTube channel, Square 2 Marketing's YouTube channel. All of our season one and season two episodes of the show are available in its video format. Like us, subscribe to it, and leave us comments. We really appreciate it. If you want to get the show, you can go over to Square 2 Plus. There's a link at the top and bottom of our website. It's also square2marketing.com/square2plus. It's our free Netflix style streaming service where we have channels for CROs, CEOs, CMOs. We have a HubSpot channel, and we even have a new channel called Pickleball Business Bangers. If you like pickleball, there's a little nice blend of marketing and business advice with some pickleball tips. And if you like the show specifically, there's a show podcast link at the top and bottom of our website. Click on it. There's a What's Wrong with Revenue page on our site. You can subscribe to the show, and we'll email the show directly to your inbox every Thursday. And you can also leave us questions, of which we will answer. And I will be remiss if I don't mention the audio version of the show available on all your favorite podcasts and audio platforms. Go check it out there. Frank, Beth, Alex, thanks so much for all your help. Thanks for being on the show. And next week, we're going to talk about episode 23, season two. Our topic is, what a relevant topic. How to eliminate the cookie and change your marketing forever. So Alex, I think you might be back with me next week as a guest. We're going to dig into this very specific issue because it is really important, really good for people to know what they're going to be able to do and not be able to do going forward. So again, guys, thanks very much. I really appreciate your help. Have a really great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.